Dr. Forsher's experience with, what was he, Moorhead?
Yeah. With the government.
With the government.
I also consulted with the steelworkers here in Pittsburgh and many other organizations, and got to know, in my capacity as a consultant of the steelworkers, Lloyd McBride, president of the steelworkers. In 1979, in March 1979, Three Mile Island had an accident, and Congress and President Carter appointed a commission known as the Kemeny Commission to investigate this accident. Lloyd McBride was one of the 12 members President Carter appointed to investigate, and Lloyd McBride told me he wants me there full-time as a staff member to investigate, which gave me a fantastic opportunity to really understand some management aspects, design aspects, and operational aspects of these power plants. I wrote two reports. I wrote one report on the failure of the valve, which stuck open and caused the accident. And I wrote another report with another with a group, especially collected for assembled for this purpose, on the quality assurance as practiced by the nuclear utility, as well as by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which was overseeing, was supposed to oversee the nuclear utilities. Now, these reports became, of course, the basis of the Kemeny Report, which is well known. Our first recommendation was to change the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to a agency which, with one administrator as a head, like the EPA, rather than these five commissioners which constantly disagree and can't get anything done. But more importantly, the quality assurance aspect became very apparent that it needed strengthening. And I offered my service to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to help them in this connection. I was hired as a quality assurance specialist and started to work for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in full-time in October 79. That's when the Kemeny Commission completed the report. And retired from there in July 1986.
Were you in Washington at this time?
I spent all week in Washington and commuted every weekend to Pittsburgh. It was because of this situation, my commuting, that I established a rented an apartment in Silver Spring, and I don't know whether I mentioned that in 1971 when I became an independent consultant, I formed a company. Oh, I should mention that I formed a company called Energy Management Consultants Incorporated here in Pennsylvania, which I wanted to form only for the purpose of bookkeeping. I didn't have any intention to hire anybody, not even a secretary, because I had experience in little companies and big companies and so on and so forth. So I just wanted to do my own work and interested in these various aspects of energy and science and nuclear power. And so when I started with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, I planned to charge the rental of my apartment in Washington and the living cost in Washington during the week and the trip expense to the company as a company expense. The company was set up in 1973, incorporated in 1973, with an employment agreement which clearly states that all my earnings in this case, all my earnings coming from my technical activities, such as royalties. I was teaching at Pitt for a while, or from books, or fees for licenses or whatever from my technical earnings should be turned over to the company, and the company will in turn pay me $30,000 a year. I got into a lot of trouble with the IRS, and it's not finished yet. I hope that before the end of this year, 1988, that we can resolve this question whether this was a legitimate way to do business or it was not. The last item I wanted to mention is what I consider to me very important. I have some ideas about the energy and energy use in society, which differs from what is usually taught in schools. I was fortunate that in 1975 I was allowed to teach a graduate course in energy management, energy policy here in Pitt, which I also taught in 76 and 77, which allowed me to point out some of these novel aspects of energy, which is briefly are this, that energy is not a commodity. Energy is a physical concept. Energy follows the laws of thermodynamics. Fuels are commodities, and fuels follow the laws of supply and demand. The economists constantly talk about energy and energy crisis mean fuel, but the other important issue is that energy, being a subject to the second law of thermodynamics, which says that energy cannot be recycled, it's a novel way of stating the second law, but energy cannot be recycled. Well, of course, money is constantly recycled. The sad story is that we don't recognize this early enough when we start buying oil from the OPEC countries, that the money we borrow, right now it's actually deficit spending, and our children will choke on it for generations to come. That money circulates forever and ever. Well, the energy we burn up, and it's gone forever. They ship the oil to us and we burn it up and that is gone. This difference between energy as a concept and fuel as a commodity has to eventually sink into our economic thinking, or we'll never get out of this morass we're in. I've read many articles and it's published in many places, and this is one of my hang-ups. I felt that I cannot do enough about such things unless I publish a newsletter of my own. I started a newsletter called Energy Commentary and Analysis. And the first issue came out in 1977. It's a quarterly, let's say. Three or four issues a year. And it's very well received. I don't charge any money for it. It only goes to people who are really thinking along my line. And it's going all over the world. I have 150 quote subscribers. A lot of people in Congress, the Office of Technology Assessment, the Library of Congress, you name it. I think this is probably from where I stand as my life work, the most satisfying aspect besides my family. I spent in 1987 was the 40th reunion of my Princeton graduating class, and I only attended one before, my 25th reunion. So I went to the reunion. Of course, for the reunion book, they want a life story of what you consider important, and I have a whole page in there telling about my origin in Vienna, my army military service, my interest in nuclear power, and my concern about the energy issue. It goes much deeper than that. Energy is a subject which covers, which is important and essential in all fields of science. There are only three major realms of science. This is the physical sciences, the social sciences, and the life sciences. In all three sciences, energy is a key aspect. And this is unfortunately also not recognized. Energy has no constituency. There's a lot of constituency for coal and for oil, political constituencies. And it is, we need something like the environmental movement, which will focus on energy per se, rather than on these various subunits, sub-issues, that will eventually settle this subject. I have a footnote on my newsletter. Maybe I should give you one copy of the newsletter to put
to
in the file.
That would be excellent.
That will explain what the basis is. I reviewed the constitutional the development of our constitution and Jefferson's input and so forth, and come to the preamble. I hold these truths to be self-evident, that men are created equal. Well, this was very important in 200 years ago. It isn't true, and it isn't important today. Well, many people, of course, still believe it. I hold these truths to be self-evident, that energy cannot be recycled, that all living organisms are endowed by their creator to fight for their survival. And that for survival, you need energy and make the best use of it internally. That applies to species, societies, single cells, regardless. It's a subject which I could talk for hours about, tying into Schrödinger's concepts and quantum mechanics, as well as to religious concepts. In the beginning, there was what? Somebody said it was the world, it was God. In the beginning, it was energy. The Big Bang was really on energy, and the bang started time. Before then, there was no time. Let's go on.
You could go on, and it is interesting. I should have brought more tapes.
I will give you I give you my resume, one-page resume, which will tell you something about this portion of my work in between when I left Westinghouse and when I really retired. Mm-hmm.
That's now would be a good time to talk about your family.
Yeah. Before that, I have a burning question. I'd like you to make a comment on where do you think we're headed to by continuing to import oil from the Arab countries rather than developing our own sources of power? Because we're no longer doing nuclear energy here, does it?
Well, we still have, this country has largest number of nuclear power plants,
oh, really?
Over 107 power plants in operation. Mm-hmm. Eventually they have to be decommissioned and they have to be repaired and maintained. But right now we have the largest number, not percentage-wise. France is percentage-wise much stronger in nuclear power. I feel that the concern with the greenhouse effect, which is the result of carbon dioxide, which comes also from automobiles, not only from the acid rain may be blamed on coal-fired power plants, but the greenhouse effect, which is much more important than the acid rain issue, and much more dangerous for the whole world economy, that comes from gasoline consumption, in addition to all the other burning, wood burning too, because the underdeveloped nations, they just deforest the whole available green CO2 generating world. So I think recognition of the greenhouse effect, the repair, the correction to the greenhouse effect will definitely be nuclear power. But it will take, I think, up to 95 to sink in. See, I have another thing, and this shows up in some of my writings, that the three C's, civilization is what makes life easier. Culture is what makes life fuller. And consensus is what makes life possible with each other. And unless we have a consensus on anything, any government needs consensus. The Russians found it out too, you know. Every government needs consensus. Without consensus, you can't govern very long. You can be a dictator and really kill people but on the long run, you need consensus to live together. And we don't have a consensus on energy. And we didn't have a consensus on the environment. We had developed a consensus on the environment, which was turned out to be very powerful. We need something like this in the energy area. When we reach only half of the consensus, we will find out that nuclear power will come in again. It is so essential. It is also absolutely crazy to consider nuclear waste as waste. Nuclear waste is actually an energy source. Nuclear waste is a radiation source, which is an energy source, and you can use it
which can be used.
You can irradiate the sewage system. Now, if you consider the Legionnaire disease, which is a bacterial disease, and suppose it was widespread, how would you purify the waters and the sewage? You run it through discarded nuclear fuel elements and just purify the water. And you can use energy for purifying food. We have already shown this. It's just not practical, not acceptable now because of the public ignorance. But there are a lot of things which scientists agree on. Mm-hmm. The other aspect to answer your issue is the radon issue, which only came about in 1984. Now, radon in homes, in every third or fourth home in the United States has a radon problem. On the average. And the allowed level of radon is 4 picocuries per liter of air, which doesn't mean much to you, but the number 4 is the level, mm-hmm. which is acceptable by the EPA. But it can't be legalized because you can't legalize the radon coming off the ground. Everybody who lives in a private home should have his home tested, and if it's high in over 4, should do something about it. Government is not going to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. The point I wanted to make is that it is well known for years, it has been pointed out by Bernard Cohn here in Pitt for 10 years, 15 years, and by Horowitz in Schenectady for a longer time than that, that the acceptable levels for radon are about 100 times as high as what the public thinks they are going to die on when they live next to a nuclear power plant. So when they realize that the exposure in the average air, which they breathe most of the time, because indoor air is the problem. Radon is not outdoor, radon is indoor. Mm-hmm. When they recognize that their home is actually much more radioactive than anything, if they would live on top of a nuclear power plant, which I would like to live, I have no fear, they're much worse off than... But they don't recognize it. It'll sink in eventually. It takes a lot of public education. The media is just so dumb. In the media, we have social journalists, and we have medical journalists, and we have sports journalists, a great number of them. Now, how many scientists and health physicists and are writing in newspapers? So you can't blame the media. Right. You don't have the right staff. Okay.
All right.
We've talked about your professional career, and before we stop, we really should talk about the other happiest parts of your life. You've said that this was the part of your professional life that gave you more satisfaction. Mm-hmm. Tell us, we know about your wife's background as a social worker. We don't really know yet about your family.
Well, I'm very fortunate with my kids. I have 3 girls. The oldest one is Carrie, born in 1948. I mentioned this just around the birth of Israel. Then Joni was born in 1950, and Stephanie in 1955. Kerrig was born in New York, but all of them grew up in Pittsburgh.
Where are they now?
They are all married. Kerrig is married to Dr. Stuart Fogel. He's a diagnostic radiologist, ultrasound specialist. She has four children.
Do they live in Pittsburgh?
They live in Pittsburgh. Joni is married to a scientist. His name is Jerry Ramage, and he works as a statistician, statistical economist, I guess now, in Bell Laboratory.
That's in
Murrysville, and they live in Westfield, New Jersey. And Stephanie lives in Pittsburgh. She is married to Bernie Barron, a well-known Pittsburgh Squirrel Hill family. And they live, they have two children, two girls. Joni has two boys.
Are your daughters scientists as well?
No. Passover we get together here.
That's
and this is about 2 years ago. The youngest one. What's the youngest one?
We're looking now at.
She's 3 years. She's now 3 years. Yeah, she's now 3 years old. Now, this is my oldest daughter and her husband. This is Ali, Janie, and Michael. And Amanda, these four children are Dr. Fogel's children. Ali is now in high school. She started in 1988, she started high school. She's the oldest grandchild of the eight grandchildren I have. Joni and Jerry live in Westfield, and these are the two boys. This is Mark Forsher. Because I remember
yes,
I told you
she's
not,
you tell us
she's not giving up the name.
Yes.
And this is Danny Ramage.
Yes.
And this is Stephanie and Bernie Berndt. And this is Maggie, Margot, Maggie, we call her Maggie. And Vanessa. I just went downtown this afternoon before you came to get her glasses. Unfortunately, she has to wear glasses.
Which is Stephanie? I met her.
This is Stephanie.
Oh, yeah. She's an artist, isn't she?
Yeah, she's the artist.
Yes.
So there is the artistic background, if not the scientific background.
Well, the only one who has scientific leanings without having some... She's a student. The other ones are not really students. They did go to college and... And I think Kerry even got a master's degree in library science, but they are not really students. She could be a real good student. I suggest she should go to law, but she doesn't have the patience. Joni, on the other hand, she was a good student from kindergarten. And in high school, she took all kinds of extra, including Russian and Greek and German. And the Russian interested her so much that when she graduated high school and went to Michigan, she took... majored in area studies.
Yes.
And with the University of Ann Arbor, took it to Russia for about 4 months, and she was really interested in that.
Oh.
And when she graduated, she got a scholarship to the University of Chicago, got a master's degree in international relations, something like that. And of course, when she came out, she thought she would... go either to the State Department or to the CIA or some foreign relations department in some large company, multinational company. There was nothing around. She came back to Pittsburgh from after Chicago and worked at CMU in the office. And for 1 year, and she met Jerry there, who was teaching statistics and mathematics. He got an appointment to the University of Pennsylvania in
Philadelphia.
Yeah, actually, yes. The Wharton School, actually.
Yes.
And so Johnny said, I'll go to Wharton. But she had no Wharton admission requirements, so pretty strong mathematically.
Yes.
So she, during the summer months, she started on her own all the mathematics she needed to get in. And she got in, and she got an MBA from Wharton in a couple of years. And she married a professor while she was there. As a matter of fact, she eloped, but and she announced the elopement, and we decided to come along on the elopement.
Wow. Sounds familiar to me.
So they're very happy. They decided to live in after he left the university and got a very good offer from Bell Labs.
Mm-hmm.
But Joni had no problem getting a job after she got a master MBA from Wharton,
exactly.
And having two other degrees.
Yes.
So she decided to work for Pennsylvania Bell. And when Jerry started in Murray's Hill, New Jersey, they decided to buy in Princeton, which is halfway between the two places of work. That lasted for a while. She had both kids there. Jerry commuted, but recently she certainly didn't want to go back to Pennsylvania Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like a housewife now, but very active in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry is not Jewish, but very Jewish conscious, and mm-hmm. She is the most most active Jewish daughter I have.
Yes.
With both boys, of course, being circumcised and having Sunday schools and doing all the right things.
Yes. Let's, in the time that's left, talk about some of your hopes for the future, some of your own plans, either professional or personal.
After I left the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, I was still involved with several companies as both on the board of directors and also as an officer. One is a little known company, nuclear science and research company, and the other one is a company with marketing radar remediation equipment. They're both in Virginia. I'm still active with them, but primarily my time was spent on committee work. I'm very active in standards work. I consider standards the laws of the technical societies, of the technical society. And just like laws in government, what we understand as laws and regulations are provided by consensus and debate, standards are developed on the same basis, and I'm a strong believer in that type of participatory technology. And one of the difficulties with our general recognition of the importance of technology in our society is that it is not enough participatory. Standards provide the best, clearest way to participate for anybody.
Is this a national group?
Well, it's just every technical society should, and most good ones do, develop their standards pertaining to their specialty.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a national umbrella organization, it's called American National Standards Institute, which represents America in the International Standards Organization,
yes.
ISO, which is headquartered in Paris. And unlike any other countries, the United States is the only one who has a private organization, privately sponsored organization representing the country.
Mm-hmm.
Most countries' standards development work is done by a government organization.
Yes.
Now, a lot can be said about it. I've been working both in the national and international standards area, and I'm one of the largest standards organizations in this country, which is recognized internationally, is the American Society for Testing Materials, ASTM. I'm an honorary member of the ASTM, and I've participated in many of the conferences and development work. I plan to continue with this. I also participate in the quality assurance requirements for nuclear issues, not only nuclear power plants, but any nuclear transportation, nuclear waste, nuclear radiation, radiopharmaceuticals, and so forth. There is a quality assurance committee which sets quality assurance standards, which is chartered by the ANSI, by American National Standards Institute, and assigned to the American Society for Mechanical Engineers. I'm a member of emeritus for the. I'm a member of the American Nuclear Society, a life member of the Metallurgical Society, and so forth. So because of my writings and my past activity, I'm pretty well known in these fields, and I plan to continue to be active in it and do as much as I can. These standards, like laws, take a long time sometimes. I've been, for instance, familiar with the development of the Energy Security Act, which was the last work Bill Moorhead did in Congress before he retired from Congress.